Radio Prague News. The lower house of parliament on Wednesday approved the state budget for 2009 with a deficit of 38.1 billion crowns. Deputies have approved a wage increase for public sector employees to offset the impact of the financial crisis. And the health ministry is planning to close down a third of the country's oncology centres with the aim of improving and expanding those currently providing top quality care. The lower house of parliament on Wednesday approved the state budget for 2009 with a deficit of 38.1 billion crowns. The budget was passed by 101 votes in the 200-member lower house. Despite its weakened position, the coalition government managed to secure the votes of all five rebel deputies, overriding protests from the opposition Social Democrats and the Communists. Opposition leader Jiří Paroubek accused the finance minister of having pushed through a misleading budget proposal based on unrealistic expectations. The budget operates on a 4.8 growth figure for 2009. Finance Minister Kalousek said he was prepared for a variety of economic scenarios, including drastic ones which he hoped would not materialize. In Wednesday's vote, deputies approved a wage increase for public sector employees to offset the impact of the financial crisis. The proposal to earmark an extra 2.7 billion crowns for wages in the public sector was put forward by the Labour Ministry and supported by deputies both left and right of centre. The extra funds will enable a 6.6% increase in salaries for all civil servants, except those whose wages have been frozen until 2010. The Health Ministry is planning to close down a third of the country's oncology centres with the aim of improving and expanding those currently providing top quality care. The decision was made following an audit of oncology centres around the country and is supported by the Czech Oncology Society. The head of the society, Jiří Vorlíček, said he had long been aware that the level of care provided in different institutions vastly differed, but the most he could do was to privately advise his patients where they could get better care. Rebel deputies of the ruling Civic Democratic Party have rejected rumours that they are preparing to join the ranks of a new Eurosceptic party being set up by people close to President Václav Klaus. Deputy Vladimir Tlustý, who has long pushed for a more radical tax reform, said he had not been contacted by the founder of the new party, Petr Mach, and that he had no interest in leaving the Civic Democrats. President Klaus's decision to sever himself from the party he founded on the grounds that it had become too centrist and support the newly emerging Eurosceptic party has fueled speculation that the already weakened government coalition could lose more deputies. 13-year-old Petra Škrabalová from Brno has been awarded a medal for bravery for jumping into a lake to help save a drowning man. Petra was walking past the lake with a friend when she saw the incident and without a second thought plunged into the water to help the man get back to the shore. An emergency crew, which arrived on the spot 10 minutes later, said she'd saved the man's life. Every year, people write into a special children's fund to report acts of bravery by children of all ages, and the most remarkable are awarded medals at a special ceremony. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The next few days should be cloudy with rain or sleet showers and day temperatures between 1 and 5 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, broadcasting from the Czech capital with me, Rosie Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, Czech ratification of the Lisbon Treaty is again put on ice, a new initiative to cut down queues at the doctors, and the computer game which puts Czech school children in the shoes of European leaders.
It's not a PR for European Union, and I think the crucial thing for Czech students, I mean, they are living in European Union and they are living in Europe, period.
Then later, we go to the birthplace of Oskar Schindler, Svitavy, in this week's Spotlight. All that coming up, so please stay tuned. Czech ratification of the Lisbon Treaty has essentially been put on ice for 8 months as the Constitutional Court weighed up whether such an agreement was in any way at odds with the nation's constitution. The court eventually found that it was not, but far from marking the beginning of smooth sailing towards the treaty's ratification, fresh squabbles and delays are threatening to cast a shadow over the Czech EU presidency. Dominic Yoon reports.
Czech ratification of the Lisbon Treaty and the Czech presidency of the European Union are at best uneasy bedfellows. While the two are not contingent on each other, the Czech government, headed by Mirek Topolánek, would certainly like the country to pass the treaty during its tenure, and is devoting considerable political capital to that intent. Along with Ireland, the Czech Republic stands alone in the EU in not having ratified the document that proponents argue would help to both integrate Europe and streamline decision-making. Almost exactly a year on from the Czech Prime Minister and Foreign Minister signing the Lisbon Treaty, beginning the long process of final approval, the Czech Republic remains the only country in the EU to not have held a parliamentary vote on the document. Why? Because there is a genuine fear that the treaty would not gain the support of the majority of MPs in Parliament. With the communists opposed and a number of civic democrats also against the treaty, approval hangs in the balance. Political commentator Eric Best believes that the recent decision to delay the vote until February at the latest is a highly tactical one.
Even Topolánek said that he would personally vote against it if it were put on the agenda and a vote were taken yesterday or this week. So it was pretty clear that the objective was to delay it for a while. It was also, of course, interesting because the Social Democrats actually willingly accepted this delay of a couple of months. It was showing that the Social Democrats have been beating their chest a bit, but their demands have not been as cast in stone as they have been trying to make us believe.
After waiting for the Constitutional Court to declare that the document is not at odds with the country's constitution, on Tuesday a parliamentary discussion on Lisbon was finally started, and then abruptly halted. The events occurred on a tumultuous day which began with a series of meetings. The governing Civic Democrats met with both the opposition Social Democrats as well as with the minority coalition parties. Soon word was out that the Czech Prime Minister believed that the process should not be rushed, essentially letting it be known that a parliamentary vote should not take place. Then the matter finally reached the floor of the lower house, where after a mere 15 minutes, members voted to adjourn discussion of the treaty until February, after the Czech Republic assumes the EU presidency. There has also been much talk of horse trading. The Civic Democrat leader, fearful of Eurosceptic rebels within party ranks, is said to be offering a deal to Social Democrats. You support the radar, we will support Lisbon. I asked Eric Best to explain the context for such moves.
Democrats had said that first the radar and then the Lisbon Treaty, and now it's the other way around, and of course there's still some question as to whether the Lisbon Treaty will pass in February. But if it does pass, it will still be quite difficult, I think, to guarantee that the Social Democrats would vote for the radar. And I think it's partly a realization that the radar could face a bit of delay because of the financial situation in the United States, and at the same time the coalition government was under great pressure to come up with a Lisbon strategy before it takes over the EU presidency.
And this latest move arguably gives it that strategy and sends an apparently reassuring signal to Europe that movement is continuing towards the Czech ratification of Lisbon.
Dominic Yoon with that report. Now, it's well and truly the cold and flu season here at the moment, and there's nothing worse than having to wait about in a doctor's surgery with a soaring temperature and runny nose. In fact, endless queues at the doctors have long been a major complaint of Czech patients. Especially at this time of year, it's not uncommon to wait an hour or more. But now that could change. In January, the country's largest insurer, VZP, will launch a project entitled Accord, aimed at improving doctor services. That could cut down on time spent in the waiting room. Soon, many will be able to call ahead for appointments at participating practitioners, guaranteeing waiting times of just 15 minutes. Jan Vellinger has the story.
What can be more frustrating than coming down with the flu, but having to wait endless minutes at the doctor's? In the Czech Republic, that's all too common an experience. Studies, including a recent survey conducted by the Czech medical website Lékaři Online, or Doctors Online, suggest that endless waiting times more than any other factor top patients' lists of complaints. Pavel Hilbert, a manager at Lekary Online, told me more about the website study.
We were interested in questions such as if the patients are content with the services of their general practitioners, if they are content with the attitude of doctors, if they think that they are given enough information. And one of the main problems is that the patients have to wait for the doctors for 30 minutes, an hour normally, and most of the patients would appreciate the possibility to come to a doctor on a specified time.
Now, long waits, at least at some doctors, could be a thing of the past. The Czech Republic's largest insurer, VZP, which has more than 6 million clients, will launch a pilot program in four of the country's 14 regions in January, one which should make going to the doctors a far more pleasant experience. The VZP's Anna Veverková.
Celkem se staráme o 6,5 milionu pojištěnců.
We have almost 6.5 million clients, and one of the most common complaints is long waits at the doctors. We want to offer patients the possibility to make advance appointments, and participating doctors should be able to keep waiting times to 15 minutes. That's something we consulted with doctors themselves, but that's not all. The broader idea behind the plan is also to improve communication and the sharing of information between GPs and specialists to help, for example, in the proper issuing of prescriptions. There too, patients should benefit.
Reasons for doctors to participate should be not only better information and more effective communication, but also financial incentives. But will the project have a positive effect? The insurer VZP certainly hopes so. It plans to broaden the project to all of the regions by 2011. Some, like Lekary Online's Pavel Hilbert, certainly welcome the initiative. While conditions in healthcare have improved markedly in recent years, there's no question some doctors remain stuck in the past.
Going back to the socialist era, patients didn't have any influence on the services of doctors and hospitals. They had to wait for the general practitioner or for the doctor any amount of time. If the doctors don't have the need, why should they change?
The VZP's Accord project will begin in the new year, and all doctors participating in the project will display the Accord logo.
Jan Vellinger there with interesting news for anyone who's familiar with time-consuming visits to the doctor in this country. Now, not everyone's been happy with how the Czech government has planned for the country's fast-approaching EU presidency. But have you ever wondered what, in such a situation, you would do differently? Well, now a new computer game is giving Czech high school students the chance to try out their own approach. Europe 2045 sees students trying on the shoes of Angela Merkel, Gordon Brown and Mirek Topolánek, and finding out, by extension, how the EU works. Early feedback points to the game being a success, with students reportedly promising to do each other's homework in exchange for support in virtual common agricultural policy talks. Earlier today, the game's creator, Vít Šísler, gave me a demonstration.
It's an educational strategy game, which is called Europe 2045. In the game, if you just start a game, like each student is responsible for one member state of the European Union. He's responsible for the internal politics, like for setting the taxes, for the social politics. If you look at the second screen, here you got like the government of your state. You got the ministers, and you can very easily change the domestic policies of your state. So you can set the level of taxes. You can set how much money you put into, I don't know, environment, into education. And the simulation is not based only on the like economic issues, but there are also some ethical and like more broad issues, like for example the registered partnership of people of the same sex or the drug policy.
It all looks slightly complicated. I mean, who is this exactly designed for? What age group of school child?
16 to 19 or 16 to 18, the second grade of high school.
Okay, and why did you do this? Why did you design this game?
Basically, the problematics of European Union is quite unfamiliar to most of Czech teenagers, and to be honest, it's really complicated. Like, it's if you try to explain to high school students what exactly is the structure of European Union, what exactly are the enactments and what are the duties, etc. It's huge and like really complex intertwined system. So our aim was to create a simulation which basically immerse or engage the student directly into the system, directly into the process.
Presumably, the sort of machinations of Europe and the way things work in Brussels is kind of quite important to people in Brussels. But why is it important to Czech school children? Why do people need to know these things?
Well, actually, it's important to know that this game was financed partially by the European Union, but it was financed not as a PR for European Union, but it was financed in a program of development of schooling of second grade schooling, and in the game actually, like the game is open to many possibilities. Some of them are being discussed now in European Union, some of them are not. So actually, in the game, you can very easily. Transfer the sovereignty from European committee or from European institutions back to the national state. So in the game, actually, if the students really want to, they can deconstruct the European Union and put back the integration process into the only like economical framework without all those like political things. So the game is really open and it's not a PR for European Union, and I think. The crucial thing for Czech students, I mean, they are living in the European Union and they are living in Europe, period. It's not only about European Union. We are simulating, like, the conflict in Chechnya. We are simulating the relationship between Europe as a whole and Russia. We are simulating the conflict in Darfur. The relationships between Europe and the United States and China are also in the game, yes. So it's not only about internal European politics. And we basically think that... You should know what are you affected by and like what system you are living in, and you should try to understand it.
Veit Schiessler, the man behind the computer game Europe 2045, whom I spoke to earlier today. And by the way, the game looked really good, but also rather addictive. So be warned, any budding gamers out there. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for this week's Spotlight, which is with Jan Richter, who's been to Svitavy.
You are not very likely to wander into Svitavy by chance. Located on both the major road and railway line connecting Moravia and eastern Bohemia, for most people Svitavy is just a name on their itinerary. But if you do come and take a closer look, you'll find a little town proud of its past and working for a better future. Once an important town for Moravia's textile industry, repopulated after the expulsion of Svitavy's German-speaking inhabitants, it only recently showed its pride in perhaps its most famous native personality, Oskar Schindler. Svitavy got its name from the little river Svitava that rises near the town running south. A small settlement at a ford across the river, it grew into one of the biggest centers of textile industry in Moravia. But the times when thousands of people moved in to work in its factories are long gone. One of the people to have recently come here to live is Daniel Lupton from Michigan in the United States. He came with his wife 2.5 years ago to help establish a church in Svitavy and says that local people made settling in really easy.
I think I was surprised at the welcome that Svitavy gave me. I think even after 2.5 years, I'm almost a celebrity here because I'm the only native-speaking English person for many kilometers around. But I was surprised. The schools opened up their arms and said, please come, and the mayor and everybody, the music programs. I was surprised, and I'm still surprised at how friendly and welcoming people are to me. There have been no negative surprises. I enjoy Svitavy very much.
Svitavy was once called Svitau by most of its inhabitants. The majority of the 10,000 people who lived here until after the Second World War were Moravian Germans, and Svitavy was in fact where the name Sudetenland and Sudeten German was first used to describe the German-speaking community of Bohemia and Moravia. Radoslav Fikes is a historian in the local museum.
Pojem Sudety, to je víceméně také sudetský termín, protože místní pracovníci.
The term Sudety or Sudetenland originated in this region as well. A local librarian, Dr. Jesser, used this term probably for the first time in 1902. He used it in an analogy to the expression Alpendeutsche, referring to the Germans in the Alps. He was probably the first to call Germans in Bohemia and Moravia Sudetendeutsche.
From the start, the river provided water for the town's textile workshops and manufacturers. The town square, recently restored, was soon surrounded by spinning mills, dye plants and other factories.
Soukenictví, plátenictví a tkalcovství tvořilo přirozenou obživu města.
Drapery, cloth making and weaving was a natural way of making a living for the town and its inhabitants from the 16th century onwards. This period was also the golden age of the town. It became a major textile producer. In the 20th century, 133 textile factories were registered here.
Bylo registrováno 133 protokolovaných továren textilní výroby.
After the end of the Second World War, ethnic Germans, who accounted for more than 90% of the town's inhabitants, were expelled, and the town was repopulated with Czechs. The post-war change in population and the following years of communist rule was a period in which Svitavy didn't like to look back and remember the town's past glory. Apart from the square, perhaps the most precious historic landmark is the Ottendorfer Library, a testament to the incredible life journey of Valentin Oswald Ottendorfer, who was born here in 1829.
Jako student bojoval v roce 1848 na barikádách.
As a student, he fought on Prague's barricades in 1848. His participation in the democratic life of students in Prague and Vienna made him leave for the United States. His beginnings were tough, but he eventually became a journalist and married the widow of the most important German language newspapers in the United States, the Staatszeitung. That brought him enough money to be able to start a number of philanthropy projects, both in the US and in Svitavy. He built a hospital, an orphanage and a poorhouse in his hometown, as well as a library and a reading room.
19. století postaví veřejnou knihovnu a čítárnu.
Another self-made man from Svitavy was Oskar Schindler. In 1944, he moved nearly 1,200 Jewish prisoners from the Auschwitz concentration camp to his factory south of Svitavy, saving them from extermination. The town only began to appreciate him after the fall of communism and after the 1993 film Schindler's List. Daniel Lupton again.
Yes, I did know about Oskar Schindler. In fact, I used that as sort of the hook to introduce my friends. Svitavy, where is that? Well, have you ever seen the movie Schindler's List? Oh, yeah. Well, I said that all happened in or near Svitavy. Oskar Schindler grew up in Svitavy. So when I have American friends come, we show them the house that Schindler grew up in. We take them to the museum where there's an Oskar Schindler display. We show them the monument in the park, which is just a few meters from our flat. And I even take them south of here to the factory.
The monument to Oskar Schindler in Svitavy was erected in 1994, 50 years after the life-saving journey. Although he had a controversial personality and was an unscrupulous businessman, Radoslav Fikes from the Municipal Museum says the town is certainly proud of what he did.
Město Svitavy připomíná nikoliv Oskara Schindlera jako personu.
The town of Svitavy does not commemorate Oskar Schindler as a person, but rather his deed, saving 1,200 human lives. For us, he remains a savior, someone who did a great thing during the Holocaust, something that does not often happen in history. Schindler himself, as one of the Jews he saved said, had several personalities in one.
Je vlastně několik osobností v sobě.
After the fall of communism, the town had to face a breakup of the industrial giants created after the war, with many of the old factories having to close down. But this year, a part of a large factory compound built in the 1920s right next to the town square was converted into Fabrika, a multi-purpose cultural center. Its director Petr Mor says the town took advantage of the new possibilities from the European Union.
Ta prapůvodní příčina, proč se město k tomuto kroku rozhodlo, bylo to, že město hledalo...
The original reason why the town decided to go ahead with this was that we were looking for a new place for the library. At first, we wanted to have a new building erected in the center of the town, but then we found out about possible funding from the European Union. And this old textile factory met all the conditions.
Apart from the library, the four-story building has a concert hall, meeting rooms, an internet cafe and other facilities. Although some people say the investment of some 200 million crowns, or nearly 10 million US dollars, was far too big, its director argues that Fabrika will be there for future generations, making the town more enjoyable to live in. For Daniel Lapton, living in Svitavy is great already.
Well, there are a lot of things to like about Svitavy. From the size, it's a perfect size. It's not a little village, and it's not Prague. It doesn't have a million people. It's small enough that whenever I go to town, I see people I know and I'm greeted. It is large enough. I can find almost anything I want here. It's a wonderful place to raise a family. The city is nice, and yet within walking distance, I can be out in nature, out in the hills, out in the forest. It's a lovely place to be.
Daniel Lupton, the one American in Svitavy, ending that edition of Spotlight by Jan Richter, and indeed our show today here on Radio Prague. Before I go though, let me remind you that you can write to us about any of the themes or reports you've heard in today's show, or with any questions that you have about the Czech Republic more generally. The address for post is Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic, and you can send us an email at english@radio.cz. And don't forget to go to our website, where you can find all of today's articles again in both text and audio format, and a comprehensive archive of all of our past reports. That's all at www.radio.cz. But for now, that's all. So from me, Rosie Johnston, and the rest of the team here in Prague, it's goodbye and take care.